That's pretty scary.
Yeah.
All right. okay, I'll try and scratch my way through this year. My voice, for some reason, has gone again, but I'm hoping to be able to restore it. We're looking this evening, I hope, at four parochim. We're kind of, it's a bit of imbalance. We spent nearly 2 months on three parochim, so we might as well do four parochim in one shiur. You know, it's just the way it works out. Chapter 4 through chapter 7 is basically the very sad saga, I suppose I would call it, of the Aron HaKodesh. What happened was, you remember in chapter 3, Shmuel gets this message to give to Eli. There's going to be a tragedy, and Eli already knows from the Ish Elokim, he's already had the message. And basically, this is a very serious situation. And in chapter 4, we'll see exactly how it plays out. We'll look at Perek Dalet, we'll summarize maybe Hey and Vav, and then we'll look again at Perek Zion. So let's see how we get through this, and there's a few points that I want to raise. Pasuk Aleph, chapter 4. Vayhi Devar Shmuel, L'chol Yisrael, V'yetzi Yisrael, Likras HaPlishtim, L'chomah. So Shmuel is now authority. And now they're going to have a war yet again with the Plishtim. Okay? I always feel the Plishtim and the Palestinians, it's too close in title. You know, we've been fighting these guys for a long time. May not be the same nation, but they come from the same part of the world. V'yachano al Eben HaEzer, Plishtim Chol of Afik. So they were setting up battle lines. Eben Ezer in one place and Afek in the other place. That's it, Afek. Ve'yarchu plishtim mikrat Yisrael v'titosha milchama v'inogav Yisrael if ne'a plishtim. And a tragedy happened and the war took place and the Jews were beaten. Okay, this was, you know, I remember the 1973, that shock, the initial shock after Yom Kippur, and you heard that, you know, that something had happened so shocking like that, and it wasn't going to be a six-day war all over again. This comes, you know, it comes as a shock, and this was the original shock to them. V'yakum ha'achar b'sadeh ka'arbat alefim ish, 4,000 men were killed in the Jewish army. V'yavoham el machaneh v'yomu zignei Yisrael, lama nagafanu Hashem ayom, lifnei plishtim. They asked the question, why have we been smitten? Why did we lose? The elders asked, Nikcha ilenu mishilo et aron brit Hashem. And they decided that they were missing the secret weapon. What's the secret weapon? The Aron. They will take the Aron. We're going to have to discuss what exactly, which Aron they took, if there was more than one. All right, there's a machlokis about this, and we'll talk about this in a few minutes. But they decided we've got to have the secret weapon, which is the Aron. All right, the Ark. They put all their trust in the Aron, not realizing that it's all about essentially trusting in God. The Aron was just a means to an end. But if you're not fit and up to the standard demanded of the Aron, that you are behaving in a certain way or not behaving in a certain way, then the Aron is not going to do it for you. And of course, this became a bigger tragedy, because not only did they lose the battle the first time, but they lost the second time, lost the Aron as well. Okay, this is even worse. Like the gambler, you know, the last 100 bucks, and he borrowed 100, and it's all gone. Vayishlach ha'am shilo, vayisu misham et aron brit Hashem tzva'ot yoshev ha'kruvim. They brought this Aron, this special Aron from Shiloh, which was where the Mishkan was. Vesham shnei b'nei Eli and aron brit Elokim, and the sons of Eli came with. Chofni u'pinchas, who we're going to see now, unfortunately meet a very sad end. Certainly in terms of Eli. Everybody started screaming. And the earth started shaking. Basically, it was such an exciting moment that the Aron came into the camp. All right, it's a strange story. The Plishtim, you would have thought at this point in time, with the reputation of the Jewish army, would have turned around and said, right, that's the end of the battle for today. Let's all go home, and we'll watch Seinfeld, or whatever they used to do in those days. That's it. They said, what's going on? What is this great tumult? What's the great noise going on? And they knew that the Aron had arrived, and, you know, and it had a reputation. I think the reputation, if you think back to the beginning, certainly it's... in Sefer Yoshua, the Aron, you know, to stop the waters. Everybody knew that the Jews crossed the Yarden, and it was to do with the Aron. So, you know, everybody had a certain sense of what the Aron represented. All right, we're on chapter 4, Pasuk Zayin. We're just going to do Ideally, we're going to get through four chapters. As I said at the beginning, we've done three chapters in 6 weeks, so we might as well do four chapters in 1 week. This is the way, hopefully, it'll work out. Yeah.
Did they approach the Aron, Chas v'Shalom, like an Avodah Zarah?
Well, that's the problem. How did they approach the Aron, right? Like, what did they see in it?
Like an eagle.
It seems to be, with hindsight in the story, that seems to be the explanation. In other words, on the face of it, it seems a good idea. They'll bring the Aron represents God, and everything is going to work for us. And of course, the tragedy is it doesn't work. So what was the problem? And you'll see afterwards it seems very clear, because Shmuel says to them, the only way you're going to win round three, because they have a third battle, is if you get rid of all your Avodah Zarah. All the Geshkus got to go, all the gods, and then you'll be fine. So they were taking the Aron, and in their pocket they had, who knows what, a little god here and a little image here. You know, the Balzavuv, that's my favorite. A little image the size of a fly. Okay, so, you know, you imagine what that was. He's probably used to wear around their neck like a little necklace or something. And this was an Avodah Zarah, you know, a little one. Pocket, you know, like the iPod or the whatever, the equivalent in those days. This tiny little machine that they could, tiny little god that they could tie around their neck, and there you go. And you're worshipping an idol. Whatever it is, I think you're right, and we'll save that for the end.
But so, even if it wasn't Avodah Zarah,
It seems to be, again, what is the allowance, what would be the allowance, and this is going to be depend on what we're going to read in a few minutes. The rabbis are perplexed by this, very perplexed, because they argue that, in fact, if there was only one Aron, you're absolutely right. Taking it out was the absolute reason why they lost it. It turns out, according to some opinions, there were two Arons, there were two arks. One which was to stay permanently in the Kodesh Kodshim, and then this one, which was, you know, like you said, you know, like we have one going around the houses every so often. So we used to have a traveling ark, which would be taken out to war, and again, would it be useful? The answer is, it depends on the people. If the people deserve the victory, then the ark will help. They don't, they don't. So it's, your point is very valid, and as I said, we'll talk about that in a few minutes. All right, Pasuk Zayin. So look what happened. The Plishtim decided not to go home. Vayiru Plishtim ki amru ba'alehim ha'machaneh. They were scared because the Shem Elokim, the name of God, God has come, you know, the Jewish God has come to the camp. Vayiru oilonu kilayta gazodet moshe shom. This is curtains for us. It wasn't like this yesterday or the day before when we had our previous battles. We're done for. But wait a second. Oilonu, this is the Plishtim. Who's going to save us from these mighty gods with a small g? They saw it as, you know, as always, because these are pagans. But they, God forbid, they would recognize that Hashem Echad, but they nevertheless knew the power of the what they called the gods of the Jews. But then they turn around and they do something amazing. Hitchazku. Alright, chazak chazak v'nil chazek. Let's be strong. V'ayul anashim plishtim will be men, pentav du le'ivrim, because otherwise we'll become slaves to the Hebrews, kasher avdu lachem, as they served you, v'yisim l'anashim nilchantem, become men and fight. In other words, basically we don't want the tables turned, we don't want to become their slaves. So therefore we're going to stand up and fight. Okay, so this was a speech. This was, you know, Braveheart, if you saw that movie. This was trying to get the troops motivated at that point. The Jews were defeated again, second time. It was a terrible loss, and they had terrible casualties. 30,000 men were killed. Unbelievable. And not only that, this is obviously even worse. In a way, Aaron Elokim Nokach, and the Aaron was taken, Shnei Bnei Eli Metuchovni Pinchas, and the two sons of Eli died. At this point, there's an interesting pasuk which, when I teach this, I always tell the students, put it in your pocket. Keep it around, because you're going to need it in about 15 chapters' time. All right, this pasuk is very fascinating. Vayorot Ishbis Binyamin Me'a Maracha, a man of Binyamin ran from the battle. He came to Shiloh. He was in a bit of a mess. Okay, it's a torn uniform. He had Adama Rosho. He had you know, earth on his head. I remember once in the Israeli army, I had to do overnight Shmirah. And I was lucky because I was at the gate post, you know, where the Shah, where you come in. And a friend of mine had to do the bunker duty. And I said to him afterwards when he came out, because I said this is the pasuk for him. He came out looking like this. He came out madav kurim, completely shmatted, and Adamar Rishon covered in dust because he'd been, you know, in a bunker the whole night. And this is how he looked. You know, I'll never forget that image. Poor guy. He was really in bad shape. And it wasn't so easy to get a shower in the army. You know, he didn't quite have places to run to so easily. But that's the image I have, the memory I have. Who is this Ish Binyamin? Who is he? Look at Rashi. Ish Binyamin. Rashi tells us something phenomenal. Rashi says, Zaya Shaul. Ish Binyamin is none other than Saul, who's going to become the king. Shechat, what was he doing? Chatav et aluchot miyad Goliath. He'd already faced Goliath. Rubarachlo. Goliath, what did Goliath do? They captured the arrow, so he took out the luchot. Now, why Goliath wasn't smitten at that moment with thunder and lightning, I don't quite know, right? But he seems to have been able to do it. And at that point, what did Shaul do? He managed to recapture the luchot. The ark was gone. But at least they had the tablets of stone, and Barachlo, he ran away. So there's been an interaction between Shaul and Goliath. All right? It's very significant. As I said, you put this pasuk in your pocket, think about it when you come back in chapter 17. Okay, that's going to be around about the year 2010, the way we're going at the moment, maybe a bit earlier than that. And when we do that, you'll see that that becomes so significant when they meet again. Goliath is threatening Am Yisrael, and Shaul is absolutely immobilized. He can't do a thing. And it's so shocking because we see here that he stood up to him. He faced Goliath. You know, you face your devils, as it were. And he managed to get, he did it the first time, and he got away with it. And that makes the whole story later on with David and Goliath, makes it much more powerful. But as I said, this is just an interesting reference, which is certainly worth knowing at this point. Chapter 4, verse 12, the first reference, Derech Agav, certainly, but it's an interesting reference to Shaul. Alright, so I just wanted to point that out. Now, what's he going to come and say? But what is this word? Hold on a second. Can't see where we're going. Yad, it's meant to be a dalet. Kisei, yad, derech, mitzapeh. So basically what Eli is doing is waiting for news, right? Ki ayali bo chared al Aaron Elokim, who's worried about the Aaron, not so much about his sons, very interestingly. And you'll see that what actually affects him most is the news about the Aaron, which again is kind of significant. All right, you know, we're wondering why did Eli's sons really not work out and didn't follow the derech of their father, and this is kind of a comment at the end of his life. Not that in any way we're accusing him, but it's just revealing. You know, the psychologists will pick on this. You know, how did you treat them when you were younger? What was it like when they were kids? And there's an interesting revelation there. Look what it says. Basically, they heard the news and they started crying. Eli heard what was, he heard this sound of crying. What's this noise? Eli got the message. The ark is gone and your sons are dead. Eli ben Tisha Shmona Shana, he was already 98. And he was already going blind, he couldn't see. And basically he's very fragile, I suppose we'll say. But Yomah Ish El Eli. And this is the news. I've just run away from the front line. Hayom, what happened, my son? Vayana Mavasa Vayama. He's got an interesting title. He's an Ish, he's a Mavasa. You know, this this interesting language is bringing Besorot, not always Besorot Tova, in this case Besorot Lotova. And he says, Nas Yisrael, if they pushed him, the Jews have run away. But Gam Magifagdolaitabam, there was a terrible defeat. Many died. The Gam Shnei Banecha Metu, Chavdi Pinchas, and not only that, your two sons have died. Varon Alakim Nilkachan, the ark has been captured. Vayehi, this is a very revealing passage. Kaskirot Aaron Elokim, when he heard about the ark, and you would think that when he heard about his sons, he would already have had the reaction. No, only when he heard about the ark at the end, Vayipol Nar Kisecho, and then he fell backwards off his chair, Ba'ad Yad Hashar, who was by the gate, Vatishavar Mafrakto Vayamot, and he broke his neck. And at that point he died. Kizakena Ish Vakaved, he was old and he was kind of heavy. I don't know, whatever Kaved means over here. Maybe it just means in weight. But Hushafat Yisrael Abim Shana, he was the judge for 40 years. Very sad. What a tragic ending. And again, we're just now told a bit what happened afterwards to kind of memorialize this event. But Kalato Ish Pinchas Aral Alat. What happened was that Pinchas, one of the wife of Pinchas, one of his sons was expecting at that point. But Tishma Tishmua Lekacha Onakim, she heard about the ark being taken. Umet Chamir Vishana, husband a father-in-law and a husband are dying. Vatichra vatelet kinecha le'atzera. At that point, she started giving birth, and one suspects that that was the shock which got the whole thing going. Uka'ed mutan, she died in childbirth. And at that point, before she died, a terrible tragedy in it. But the daberna nitzavot alea, al tiri ki ben yelat, the people were there, the midwives, they said to her, don't worry, you're having your son. V'lo anta v'lo shata liba, basically she was gone. She didn't say a word. Vatikra lanar, and she called. Now the question is, was it before she died? Maybe this is the last thing that she said. Not that she's actually, you know, she was almost dead at that point. She managed to give the child a name. And she called the name Ikavod. Ikavod. But Ikavod means there's no glory, there's no honor left for the Jewish people. Leimor galak kavod Israel. Kavod has gone away from the Jews. Alu lakach aron elukim v'elchamia v'isha. The Aron is gone, her father-in-law and her husband. Very, very, very sad. But Toman, she said, Galakavod Misrael, I suppose this was her dying words, Ki milkach aron elukim, that the ark has been taken, and as far as she's concerned, that is a sign of the kavod, the honor of the Jewish people being removed. Now at this point, chapter 5, I'm just going to summarize very quickly. What happened was that the Plishtim took it, and they basically decided they're going to make a big show of it. So you look at verse 2, they brought it into the house of Dagon, their god. Yatzigo in modern Hebrew, tzaga, is like a presentation, a play, you know, like an exhibition, right? Tzuga is an exhibition. They displayed it. They want to put it on show. It's an amazing thing. And of course, what happened? They woke up the next morning, and their god is completely smashed. And the Aron is standing. It reminds you of Avraham Avinu, that story. The Ashkim Ashtodim Mimacharat, the Ashtodites got up. He was on the ground, the god of the Plishtim. Lifnei Aron and him. And they are on Hashem, bowing before the god, the Aron of God. They thought, oh, somebody is playing a joke. They set him up again, and of course, the next day, the same thing happened. And they realized that, you know, you can't have these two powers in the same room. Obviously, they don't get on with each other. And at this point in time, Dagon is losing the battle. If you just go on a little bit further, basically what happened was it got a lot worse. Pasuk Vav, I'm just jumping through the chapter a bit. Vatichbad Yad Hashem al Ashdodim vayishimein. Basically, the Ashdod people of Ashdod, which in those days was not a Jewish place, nowadays it's a wonderful town in Israel, but in those days it was very much the center of the Plishtim, their territory, and there was a terrible plague that came about. And they got smitten by Apolim. Lo, you know this story. There's different ways of reading this. Apolim, Tchorim, this is like the creative in the Torah. And this is basically, for want of a better word, I can't even spell it because I'm not sure how many R's and H's there are. Hemorrhoids, right? Not a very nice plague. And Ashdod and everybody around them got smitten with this particular plague. And basically they realized that it was because of the Aron that they were being smitten. And they had a bit of a problem. What are they going to do? If you just go look at Pasuk Chet, Vayishlichu v'yasu kol sanei plishtim aleihem, they gathered all the officers together and they said, Ma naaseh la'aron ve'ei Yisrael, it's the ark that's giving us this particular problem, all right? And we can't really deal with this. We're really all suffering so terribly. And what did they do? They decided, Vayaseh bet aron ve'ei Yisrael, they surrounded the ark, right? Or basically what they decided to do, they brought it to a certain place. They brought it to Gat, right? Gat was probably their central, their capital. They brought it to another place, and there was a plague there as well. And they also mikata nagadol, from young to old, and they all suffered from these hemorrhoids. Hemorrhoids is not something that usually affects young people; it affects older people. And this was terrible. So they decided, all right, let's send it to Ekron. All right, let's see if they can stand the pressure. And again, the same thing. They sent it there, and the Ekronites complained because they said, you've sent it to kill me, all right, because we're also suffering. And you see, by the end of chapter 5, they didn't know what to do, all right? And look at the last verse of chapter 5. If they weren't dead, they were afflicted with this terrible affliction. And the cry went up to heaven. I give up. We're in real trouble. So what do they do at this point? And the only thing they can do, which I suppose, you know, is the obvious thing to do is get rid of it completely. Send it back. This is a trophy that we don't really want. Okay? We thought we wanted it. We thought it was great. It's giving us a lot of issues.
Well, and the winds and the rich
Sorry?
It sounds like the ransom of red cheese.
You'll have to explain what that is.
It's a story by O. Henry about a kidnapped child.
Oh, right.
It's a very funny story, but it's a classic. And the kidnappers are trying to extort money from the parents.
Yeah.
And the parents laugh at them.
Oh.
They didn't understand why until they tried to deal with this child. He was such an obnoxious...
Such a pain.
And he caused nothing but aggravation.
I think they're probably about moving about
it.
Yeah, they sent it back. That's great.
So it happened that it was a hidden weapon for Jews.
It turned out, there's a lot of irony here, right? For the Jews themselves, it was a tragedy beyond belief. Once it went out of their domain, it became an incredible force against the enemy. But of course, now it comes back to the Jewish people. What happens next? And that's the big problem. And the Oron is something where, again, you know, just a sort of a topical comment. There's always on the History Channel or one of these channels the Lost Ark, right? Where is it? So they claim it's in Ethiopia, and then I saw once the New York Times magazine did a whole piece on this. And as far as we're concerned, we have a very strong tradition. The Radak brings this in Melachim Aleph, round about chapter 6 or 7, I remember now, I think Perek Vav, and he says that when Shlomo HaMelech built the Beis HaMikdash, he built tremendous storerooms underneath, right down below. And at that point, when the 10 tribes were taken away, at that point already, the Ark was hidden. All right, and the Ark was put into one of these caverns, and it really has not left there for the last 2,500 years. Now, it's an interesting story. If you've done the tunnel tours at the Kotel, which many of you have done, you'll know when you get to the end, they tell you that's where they used to do the Master Sheni. They used to buy all the tithes, right? They used to redeem them. And at one point, I was there a long time ago when it was just open, and there was a big arch at that point. You can't see it now because it's a much bigger cab, much bigger area, which is open. But at that point, there was just an arch which was bricked in. And we asked the guide, who, I've forgotten her now, she was the sister of one of the Chavri Knesset. We said to her, what was the story of this, of the bricking in? So they said what happened was that when they first found the end of this tunnel, right, it was open. There was an opening which went right underneath the Harabayim. Very interesting. And there were three or four Rabbanim who were down there, and they started going in. Right? They were looking for the cavern for the Oren. I mean, what they were going to do when they saw it, when they found it, I'm not quite sure. They'd have to check their life insurance. You know, because according to this story, if they find the Oren, they're in trouble. They've got to put on sunglasses. They've got to put on negatives or whatever. It's like looking at the sun. So basically, at that point, there is a trapdoor in the mosque, which has a staircase going right down into this particular area. And the Arab, whoever, the Wakaf, you know, the Shomer up there, heard a noise coming from down below. They came down, and these three guys were lucky to still be alive. There was a whole crowd of them that rushed down there, and they thought that they were going to blow up the Temple Mount and whatever. I don't know what to say. I don't know. I got a lot of chizah. There was an earthquake. I don't know if you picked up that news about 6 or 7 weeks ago. And one of the places where it affected was the Harabayim. And there was a ditch, which was created like a hole in the ground. All right, I think this is it was on Arut Sheva, they actually reported it. And it just gives a bit of chizuk that, you know, when the time comes and the mosque has to go, we won't have to lift a nail. I don't believe we'll have to lift a finger. It'll happen. It'll be like we read over here, you know, all of a sudden there'll be some sort of shaking of the ground, and the whole thing disappears. What happens to the Oron, I'm not quite sure, but I suppose, you know, God has ways of working that one out. You know, or whatever the pasuk is. It's kind of interesting. I just don't know. Shlomo Goren, I remember, always used to talk about the Beis HaMikdash Min HaShamayim. There's a midrashic concept that's going to come down from heaven. I once heard him speak in London after the Six-Day War. Never forget it. And he gave this fantastic speech about the building of the Third Temple. And he was very excited about it because, you know, a year or two after the Six-Day War, then that was the talk. You know, maybe we're at the point where we can start building the Third Temple. It wasn't to be, and we're still waiting. But as I said, you know, that's just kind of filling you in afterwards. What happened to the Oren afterwards? It was clearly very. It was more than dangerous. It was just something we couldn't handle, and therefore it's been hidden. It's been put away, and to this very day, we don't really know what. But our tradition is that it's under the Temple Mount, and that's where it is. And in a way, thank God, You know, it's something that otherwise, if it was in the Israel Museum, I'm not quite sure how we would handle it. All right, look at chapter 6, and we're just going to get through this chapter very quickly. And again, what happened, that the Oron was established in Sheva Chodeshim. It was away amongst the Philistines for 7 months. Long time. And then the Philistines called to various people. They said, what should we do? Let us know. They called the Kosmim, Kohanim, their priests. They called their people, the diviners, you know, people who did tricks and magic or whatever. And they said, we've got to send it back. How do we do it? So they said, if you send it back, don't send it empty. You've got to send some sort of offering with it. And they decided to send gold. They had a lot of gold in their storehouses, and they made gold in the image. Don't ask me what this image was, like lumps of gold, which would be similar to the disease that they were suffering from. I'm not really going to go into detail. I don't really know what it was. But they also made images of mice. I don't quite know why. All right, look at Pasuk Hey, Vasitim Tzameach V'Lechem V'Tzameach B'Reichem. You had mice as well. I think that they say because the mice used to afflict them by attacking them in that particular part of the anatomy. And I don't even want to think about it because it must have been... It's a bit like the plague of frogs, right? Where the frogs used to attack them, literally used to eat them from the inside as well as the outside. I'm just not going to say any more than that because it's pretty horrible. And he says that basically that's what you've got to do. You've got to send it back, but send it back with some sort of offering. All right? And basically that's exactly what they did. And you'll see that if you just look a bit further on, and I'm making this sort of just getting through this very quickly. Pasuk Zayin v'ata kachu v'asur galach hadasha achad. You've got to make a new wagon. Shtei parot alot. You've got to have two very healthy cows, milk cows as they are called. Asher lo olalem ol, which have not yet even had a yoke upon them. Send the best. V'asartem at parot ba'gala, tied to the wagon. V'ashivotim b'neim me'achareim abaita, and you send everything. The children of the in other words, the calves of these cows, you send them back, and these cows will take the Oron by itself. And basically, what they did is they put all of this stuff, all of the gold and the Oron and everything, onto this wagon, and they sent the animals, and the animals went off. And nobody directed it. You know, it's like wandering around. It's an amazing concept. And even the distance, if you think that you're going from Gaza up to Beit Shemesh, that's not exactly around the corner. That's a bit of a trek, right? And these animals seemingly, you know, they've got the direction and they're going. All right? And this is what happened. And look what happened. Pasuk Tet. They basically made some sort of sign. They said, if it goes towards Beit Shemesh, then we know for sure the ark was the cause of our trouble. If it doesn't go in that direction, this is the plishtim. They can turn around and say the whole thing was a coincidence. And of course, that's the same idea as a Molek. Molek always talks about shekorcha badera, mikra, everything is by chance, coincidence, and the plishtim we're going to say the same. Of course, the animals go straight for Beit Shemesh, so at least the Plishtim, at least for the first few minutes, will get the message. Will they internalize the message? No. That, you know, they're never going to get it. But Yasu and Hashim came, by Yikush they parod, so they followed the instructions, and they got the animals, and they put the ark on the wagon, right, Posigal, the Yasima Daron Hashem al Agala, they put it into the wagon, and they basically sent it on its way. And Posig Yudbe, by Yishar and Aparot, but there they went Yashar Yashar, this is where the phrase comes from, they went straight. Al Derech Beit Shemesh, they went straight to Beit Shemesh. The Mesilachan, a one track. Whatever they do, the noise of the animals as they were going, but Osoyamin or Smol didn't even sort of stop to go right or left. Sana Pishim Achreim Agu Beit Shemesh. At least the officers wanted to see if they're going to get to Beit Shemesh or not, and they were going straight to Beit Shemesh. Now here comes a very strange part of the story. You think that the ark returns to Beit Shemesh and the people there receive it, and everything is great. We're going to go back to square one. And this is an unbelievable story. Pasuk Yud Gimel, Beit Shemesh Kotzrim Ktzichitim Ba'enik. The people of Beit Shemesh were harvesting. They were so happy. They saw the Oron coming. They were overjoyed. Agalabal stay Yoshua Beit Hashimshi v'talmotcha. They came to a certain field to a guy named Yoshua. V'sham Evan Gdola was a big stone. V'yivakuret atzei Agala. They broke up the wood of the wagon. V'etaparot elu alal Hashem. They made a korban there. All right, and this was a big celebration. And then the Levim came along and they took down the Oron. And they took the boxes, such everything, they sold the gold and everything else, and they made korbanot, and you'll see at the end of Tetvav, in the Pasuk 15, they made tremendous korbanot. And of course, what happened at this point, the officers of the Plishtim saw, they went back, and they took all the gold, etc. The Jews took all these images. They probably didn't know what they were, but they realized that this has been sent, and the mice and everything else. And it gives you a whole description of that. And again, something happens. Look at verse 19, Yutet. Vayach banshei Beit Shemesh. Now the men of Beit Shemesh were not bad guys, but they were also smitten. Ki ro baron Hashem, because they gazed upon the Ark of God. And look at the numbers. Shivim ish starts off with 70. Chamishim elef ish and 50,000. 50,000 and 70. What a strange number. And Rashi points out from Chazal that the 70 is not really an extra 70. It was 50,000. Each one of them was like the 70 members of the Sanhedrin. So you can tell what sort of caliber these people were. Right, or right. The other option is that there were 70 people who died, each one of them the caliber of 50,000 normal Jews, if that's the way to describe it. Whichever way around it is, and I don't know whether you're more comfortable with the 50,000 or the 70, whichever one it is, it's an unbelievable story. And this is one of the questions I want to deal with. Why did they deserve to have this terrible Omesh? Well, what did they do? Alright, you know, alright, so they saw the Omesh. It doesn't even say they gazed. I translate the gaze, but Lirot just means to look. They saw it coming, they treated it with kavod, and as a consequence, they were afflicted. What's going on here? And look at this pasuk, itablu ha'am. The people mourn. Ki yikar Hashem ba'am makah gedolah. There was a terrible plague amongst the Jewish people. Vayom anshei Beit Shemesh, mi yuchal la'amod ifnei Hashem elokim. HaKadosh hazeh, who can stand before Hashem who is so holy? V'mi ya'aleh me'aleinu, who's going to go up? And they decided, v'yishlechu malachim ha'yoshvei kirat yarim. They went to the messengers to the place sent to Kiryat Yarim. Kiryat Yarim, nowadays, if you've been there, there's two wonderful landmarks in Kiryat Yarim. One of them is Telstone, if you know that place. All right, Kiryat Tells. And the other one is the Elvis Presley Museum. And I do not joke. There really is a museum in honor of Elvis Presley. It's unbelievable. And they're both, the half del LF dollars, they're both in Kiryat Yarim. Unbelievable. I mean, it's, what a place. Only in Israel. As I say, you can only get that in Israel. And it's called Pundak Elvis. If you're ever looking for it, they'll tell you exactly how to get there. And I really have to tell you, I've actually been there, and I don't know why, but anyway. Telstone I've also been to, thank goodness. A bit different. All right, so that's Kiryat Yarim. It's sort of as you come up from Beit Shemesh, it's still the flat bit before you go down again and come up to Mavasara. And at that point, they said, they took it to somebody in Kiryat Yarim, and they knew that the guy there was a very special man called Avinadav. This guy, Avinadav, was somebody who really was outstanding, and they felt that, you know, this was a man who was of the stature, the caliber, to be able to house the Aron, at least on the short term. Yeah.
Isn't the key where they said,
Ki
ra'u
ba'aron
Hashem?
Yeah, ba'aron. Ba'aron, maybe inside. They peeked. Whatever it is, they did something which really was unacceptable, even though these are very great men. And we're going to have to try and deal with the issue. You know, at the end of the day, 50,000. I mean, these numbers are just, I mean, we had trouble with the 4,000 at the beginning. Now we're talking about 50,000, they're not even in war. All right, this is scary. And the Aron was, I mean, it was always covered over. There's always a curtain divided between the Aron and everybody else, and this was obviously the way it was done in the Beis HaMikdash as well. But at the same time, you know, it was out of its context. It was, you know, I mean, it seems incredibly difficult to understand this. Again, at the moment, I just want to get the facts sort of through, you know, through to you, and then we'll deal with some of the issues. I may not get through all of them today. Maybe next time as well. So look at Perek Zion, and this one I just want to go through again very quickly. They brought it to the house of Avinadab. And they sanctified, basically probably went to the mikveh, whatever he did, Por Aduma, I don't know, and he had to look after the Ark. It was there for 20 years. Right? Question, why wasn't it taken back to the Mishkan? Right? It stayed in Kiryat Yarim. It never actually went back to the Mishkan. Because if you read later on in Shmuel Ben, you'll see from Kiryat Yarim, it went straight to Yerushalayim. Dovid HaMelech took it up to Jerusalem. So the question is, why was the Aron never taken back? There's an obvious answer to this. Think about it. The two Aron, that's one option. And if it was the same Aron, only one Aron, but, you know, once, as you say in English, once bitten, twice shy, right? What's going to happen? We got it taken from us once, when it was the whole package together with the Mishkan. So probably, you know, keep it separate from the Mishkan is a more of a, how should we say, an insurance policy, right? If we're ever going to have trouble again, maybe we'll be able to keep it away from the Mishkan. We won't be so indicted, we won't be so accused, right, if something like this ever happens again. So they kept it separate. It's very interesting. And you think that the Mishkan without the Aron is like missing one of the main features, even though you couldn't see it. But the very fact you went there and you knew that the Ark was there was a big thing. Now, for these 20 years, no Ark. All right? Where was it? In somebody's backyard. It's amazing. It's a strange story, this. But, again, I don't know.
Why are you taking the position that it was the only Ark? I've been thinking that this was the Shiver Nufa.
And it could be. There's two opinions. All right? I'm telling you now, because you'll see the text that I've got it here. I've forgotten where this is taken from, that there were two opinions. And one opinion clearly states that it was only one Ark, and that was it. All right?
Whatever happened to the other one?
And then the question was there ever a second one? There are different views about this. Okay, and of course, what happened to Shiva Luchav? It wasn't in the second ark, meaning that it was kept either in the main one at the site, or there was like a side compartment or something like that, but it was all one ark. So there's different views about how it worked. All right, so that's why this whole story is a bit ambiguous in that sense. It's kind of interesting thing to just think about. All right, we'll just finish the chapter. Let's just see what's going to happen. As I said, four prokim in one shot. I think hopefully that's good going. My daughters in school, they were in a school in London where for 5 years they learned chapters 1 to 8 of Shmuel Aleph every year for 5 years. Can you imagine? That must have put them off learning Novi for life. And then most of the time was spent on these parokim, which honestly you can actually learn, you know, I'm just showing you can learn in 1 hour. You can get through four parokim in an hour. And to spend 5 years learning the same parokim is inexcusable. I had terrible arguments with the administration, but they weren't listening. That's why we came here. Alright, so it says, Pasuk Gimel. So you see what happened. Now, at this point, the ark is there for a long period of time, and the Jews are getting ready to, round three. Vayomer Shmuel, and now Shmuel gives them the word. And this is significant for the next chapter, which is the story of choosing the king, where Shmuel is rejected by the people in the sense that they want a king. And this speech that Shmuel gives over here will become significant, as you'll see, because it's a sign that Shmuel is very much in charge. And the fact that they want a king, and they don't accept Shmuel as a leader later on, in the next chapter, is going to be significant because of the contrast between their request in chapter 8 and what happened here in chapter 7. So I'm just sort of putting that into a framework because it's kind of a very good intro into the next parag, which will give us a lot of items to look into. But have a look at this. Pasuk Gimel. Shmuel makes this tremendous statement. Vayomer Shmuel kol beit Yisrael. He's talking to the whole Jewish people. Leimor. Saying, "Im b'chol levavchem, atem shavim al Hashem." You're doing teshuva. That's what it's about. Forget about the ark. Forget about the magic weapon that we may or may not have. It's about your standard of observance. If you're going to return to God, hasiru et Elohei Anecha mitochachem. Get rid of all the avodah zarah, ashtarot, all the ashtarot, whatever they are, and v'achinu levavchem al Hashem. Prepare your heart towards Hashem. Right, this is the pasuk in Shema. Ve'yivdu levado and serve him alone. Einu mevado. Ve'yatzel etchem miyad plishtim. Then he'll save you. Shmuel is laying it on the line. If you want to win the third round with the plishtim, it's not about ele v'rechev, ele basusim. They worry about that. They're worried about their horses, and we, b'shem Hashem, we've got to do tshuva. And this is the whole story. Pasuk dalav. Ve'yasir, and they listen. This is the incredible thing. They got it. They were Sir Bnei Yisrael at Abalim, at Ashtarot, they got rid of all the images, which unfortunately later on came back. But during the period of Shmuel, and really through the time of David, Shaul and David, they didn't appear again for a very long time. The Jews were free of this stuff. Only at the end of Shlomo's reign do you see the whole thing coming back again. It was a very big temptation, but they managed to keep it away. But at this point in time, they got rid of it. Unbelievable teshuva here. They served God alone. Okay, and that for Am Yisrael at this point in time, after the stories, remember we learned in Sefer Shoftim and all the ups and downs, that one minute they're serving idolatry, next minute they're serving God. You know, here this is a complete clear-up, spring cleaning going on here. Shmuel, go to mitzvah, the whole of the Jewish people, et paleo batchem al Hashem, I will daven for you. All right, this is now, you know, like Moshe Rabbeinu on with Amalek again. This is the tzaddik, the leader, davening on behalf of the Jewish people. They're going to war, and the combination of your teshuvah and tefillah, and I presume there's going to be a bit of tzedakah going on as well, if we don't read about that, that will be the combination which can win the war. And look what happened, Pasuk Vav, Vayikavta mitzpata vayishavu mayim vayishpachu b'nei Hashem, they made a water libation, as it were, v'yatsumu b'yom haru, they fasted, v'yom resham chatanu l'Hashem, they did a Yom Kippur. They absolutely, it doesn't say it was Yom Kippur, this whatever day it was, and they vayishpot Shmuel et b'nei Yisrael b'mitzpah, and he judged them in the sense, b'nishlo eskei mamon shebinem, Shmuel at that point decided all the matters that they had outstanding, monetary matters, Rashi says, ol iskei avei rash, over all the matters of the sins that they had committed. Basically, Shmuel at that point did a din v'cheshbon with the whole of the Jewish people in one day, don't ask me how he did it, and at that point, Am Yisrael got a clean slate. This is Yom Kippur in the extreme. And the Plishtim thing, here we go again. We're going to win the third time. Pasuk Zayin, Vayishmu Plishtim, Kit Kapsu Meisor, Mitzpata, Vayalu Samei Plishtim Meisor, that the Plishtim went up to the Jews, the officers, Vayishmu Beneisor, Vayum, they Plishtim, they started being afraid. Right? They remembered, the Jews remember what happened last, twice already. They lost the battle. Vayomru Beneisor Shmuel, Al Tachareish Mimenu Mizok Hashem. At this point, cry out to Hashem Elokeinu, Vayoshienu Miyad Plishtim. Yeah, now's your moment. Daven. Vayikach Shmuel Tzalech Alav Echad, and he made a korban. Shmuel made a sacrifice. Yaleu Allah Kalil Hashem, Pasuk Tet. He made this offering by Yazak Shmuel El Hashem, Ba'ad Yisrael, V'yaneu Hashem, and he had an answer from God. Now what the answer was, I don't think we're told, but whatever it was, probably some sort of maybe a fire, who knows what it was. Unbelievable. Two-way, this is a dialogue, you know, in those days you talk to God and God answered back. Wow. The Plishtim thought, this is it, we're going to win again. God made this tremendous noise. Alright, they didn't have to lift one weapon. It was all done with the sound effects, right? They became completely overwhelmed. They went into a panic. And they were smitten before the Jews. All Hashem has to do is a bit of an earthquake and a bit of thunder and lightning, and the enemy is completely destroyed. And this happens again and again in Jewish history. And as I said, please God, you know, in the future, let's as I always tell the students, I say, you know, that if it happened once, happened twice, you know, there's a good chance, please God, it can happen all over again. We haven't seen it for a long time, but it doesn't mean to say it can't happen. So this gives, you know, learning this gives you a bit of chizuk for the future, hopefully. Not too distant future as well. Pasuk Yudalu, we just finished the chapter, Vayetzu Anshei Yisrael Min HaMitzpah, they basically chased after the Plishtim. They went to a place called Beit Kar, and it was a tremendous victory. The stone became known as the stone of Ezer, in the word Ezra, as in Ezrat Hashem, the stone of God's help. This now God has helped us to this point, and obviously the idea is that so may you continue. But he can't know Plishtim. This was such a victory that the Plishtim were completely decimated. They never ever went back into the border of Israel at that for that period of time, for a very long period of time. All right, and they really didn't stop. But he had Hashem by Plishtim, Kol Yimei Shmuel. As long as Shmuel was alive, the Plishtim kept away. They were totally and utterly in fear, in awe of Shmuel. All the cities were returned, Israel, Ekron, Agat, from Ekron to Gath, and Gvulon, Itzil, Israel, Miyad Plishtim, they took them back. Not only that, it led to peace with other tribes, other groups in Israel as well. There was a peace treaty with the Amorites. This is kind of coming, winding down towards the end of Shmuel's time. He was the judge for all the days of his life. Every year he went, And this is now describing, obviously, in peacetime, the Savav Beit El Vagilgal Mitzvah Veshavat Yisrael Koma Koma Te'ela, and he went to all these different places. He was a traveling judge. And as I mentioned a few weeks ago, it's very symbolic that his father, who brought the people to the Mishkan and made such a big thing of going around Eretz Yisrael, traveling, bringing people closer to God, he had the tremendous merit that his son would be doing the same thing in terms of Mishpat. He would go from place to place, and people were waiting for him to come, and obviously he was a tremendous character. People would relate to him, and he was something special. And this pasuk is interesting. Last pasuk here, Chuvaso Horamosi, would go back to Rama. And I refer you to one of the Shiurim of Allah Tshuva of Reb Soloveitchik. He says that the word Teshuva doesn't appear in Tanakh, I think, except in this place. U-teshuvato, the actual full word, teshuva. And I think that's what he says there, and he gives a whole parish over there in terms of the explanation, linking the concept of teshuva and the Rosh Hashanah idea with the words over here, tshuvatara mata. The idea that you go around the whole year, it's like a cycle. You're going around, and at one point, you may be far away from the point where you started, but as you come near to Rosh Hashanah, you're going back to where you started, and hopefully, be, sort of a bit better for the experience, and coming round again to that time of the year and improving a bit more. And he gives a whole parish there, which I suggest you look at. It's very beautiful indeed. So Chuvatara Mata Kisham Beita, he would go back to Rama. That's where his house was, Vasham, and the final person is Shafatet Israel, Vayimisham Mizbech Lashem, and he made a Mizbech to God. This is a fantastic, phenomenal story here, and I just really want to share with you a very short piece, and we'll take these pages, give them out. I don't know if you just want to pass them out, and I will only do the first piece today. I don't want to do any more than that, but just show you this thing about the Aronot that we've already mentioned, and you'll see on the left-hand side. This is again taken from, in fact, it's Gemara Yerushalmi, and it's discussed over there exactly what was the whole story here about the Aron. What exactly happened? All right, and you'll see on the page, it's on the left-hand column, the top, where it says number one. I'll just read that paragraph very quickly. We don't have much time. It says, "Ki Hashem Elokeichem Aleichim Achem Lelachem Lehem Oyveichem Loshiatchem." Right, this is a pasuk in Devarim. God will be with you to fight for you. Zeh Machnei Aron, the camp of the Ark. The name of God which was inside the Aron. That was the power. The Tani, Rabbi Yehuda ben Lakish, and this is the interesting thing. Rabbi Yehuda ben Lakish says, there were two arks with the Jews in the wilderness. The commentary there says, they had the Torah plus the second tablets in one of the arks. As Leo said, the other ark had the broken tablets in it. Munachim betocho. Ze haita Torah netuna betocho. One had the complete Torah in it. Hayah natun ba'ol ma'ed, and that stayed in the Ol Ma'ed. That stayed in the Mishkan. Hadol dichtiv Aron brit Hashem Moshe lo mashu mikev amachaneh. They never moved from the camp. The ark and Moshe, they always stayed in the camp. Okay, where he talks over the Ein Sham. After the brackets. What about the second ark with the broken tablets? It would go with them to war. So in fact, the ark that we're talking about here was not the absolute glorious Aron Hashem, which was made, Betzalel, etc. One gathers that this was a much simpler construction. It was a separate ark. I don't even know if it even had gold around it. I think it was a wooden ark. And it was carried out to war, used for those purposes, and at this point in time, of course, the question is, why didn't it work? And now, of course, we have to say, it was all very well bringing it out to war, but if you're not fit as a nation to deserve the miracle of Hashem, it's not going to help you. All right? That's one opinion. The Rabbanan, interesting, there's an argument. Surprise. The rabbis say, Echadaya, there was only one Aron. Upam Achad Yatzan, it only went out once. And of course, in this case, we know when it went, in this story that we read, and it was a disaster. Ubimei Eli Nishba, and the Gemara says, according to the Rabbanan, it was captured in the days of Eli, and that was it. So according to them, it was only one ark, not two. If you look at the language of the Psukim, I know I was going to suggest that it seems to be, it was the magnificent, it wasn't like a second-rate Aron. It was like, seems to suggest this is the Aron with the Kruvim, I don't know, maybe both Aharonot had Kruvim. I really don't know. Right? My feeling is that maybe the Rabbanan are right. The Yerushalmi says that the Pasuk supports the rabbinic point of view. Right, Kariyah, Masailon Rabbanan. There's a Pasuk which actually supports the rabbis, but possibly read. Oilonu, the Plishtim say, woe to us, mi yatzilenu miyad elukim adirim ha'ilah. Who is going to save us from these mighty gods? Alright, what does that mean? Meila delochamun min yameon. Something they'd never ever seen in their days. Now again, if it was an ark like Rabbi Yehuda ben Lakish says, which would have gone out to war, maybe more than once, then clearly it would have been something that they would have seen before. Alright, because they'd had, presumably, at least it had been seen by the enemy at different times, if it was taken to war. So the suggestion of the Yerushalmi is that since it was only brought out once, that's why they could say, we've never seen it before. And of course, that, on that point, the Gemara wants to suggest, maybe the Rabbanan are right, and even though you might have thought till now there were two Aharonot, the suggestion over here is that it really was one and the same. Alright, I don't know what to say, I had no conclusion about this, right? I wrote a bit of a note over here just to say what was going on. The reality is, whichever way you look at it, there was a, by taking it out, it was chilul hakodesh, it was profaning the sanctity of the Mishkan and everything that it stood for, and as a consequence it led to this terrible disaster that took place. What we'll do, Mitzvah, next week, I just want to share with you these other notes. The point why the men of Beit Shemesh were punished so severely, which is a serious question, and a bit about the Oren itself, why in Kiryat Yarim, why did it actually stay there for 20 years, a question that we raised during the Shir. Thank you everybody, it's four chapters, that was pretty good going, thank you.